Well, I'm extremely pleased to be here and share the shotbyshot.org project with you. It's a project of the California Immunization Coalition and many partners that I'll be sharing on the slides here today. And I'm here on behalf of an amazing team. Tammy is part of the CDPH Immunization Branch, and Amanda Roth. This project is led by Amanda, who is a member of the California Immunization Coalition and also a health educator at the Department of Public Health Immunization Branch. I don't see here in the audience. I thought she was going to be here to help answer any questions you might have about the project, but I want to acknowledge her and the great folks that we get to work with at the immunization branch. How many of you do work in immunizations, or are you here to learn about things that translate good? So a good number of you, and I'll keep in mind that some of you will be taking some of these ideas back for other programs that you're working on. Most important, though, I'm really pleased to share this project in honor of the individuals and families who have contributed to this effort and who've taken the time to record their very personal stories, personal and often painful stories about vaccine-preventable diseases. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, and I'm going to start with a story, Gavin's story, and it's told by his mother, Natalie. Thank you for letting us share that with you, and we are especially thankful to those parents who have made their stories available to us in the hopes that it will resonate with other families and educate other families. As public health advocates, as immunization advocates in particular, we know what the immunization message is, that immunizations prevent deadly diseases. And that's what we're always trying to hammer home. But as you know, it's not as simple as that. If it was, we would all be seeing people exercise, eating right, losing weight, not smoking, having safe sex. But that's not what's happening, you know, and we need more. And shot by shot, we see as one of those parts of providing more for people to be able to understand what these diseases are, how it impacts lives. And I think it's really important to know that these stories that we have put together on the shotbyshot.org website, they're not immunization, they're not promoting an immunization, the vaccine itself, per se. These are stories of vaccine-preventable diseases. They're what happens when a child is not immunized or is not immunized on time, perhaps, or when there's breakthrough disease. When, even if a child is immunized, they can still become ill with this disease. So it's important, to see that delineation that this is not, you know, saying, you know, get your particular vaccine. It's talking about this is what can happen. This is what does happen in our community. So I want to share, you know, why Shot by Shot, what generated the Shot by Shot program. You know, more and more we're seeing a lot of misinformation out there on the internet. Over the past 10 years, we've seen a significant number of parents that are now, as Dr. Sawyer was talking about, vaccine hesitant, which is kind of a polite way, but it's true. There's vaccine hesitant parents, there's anti-vaccine parents, there's fence sitters, parents that are concerned. And but all together put them, we've got a problem of parents now declining vaccinations or selectively immunizing for their children or themselves. And it's causing an impact. In Washington State, for example, the exemption rate is now at 6%. It's coming down because they've passed some good laws to help limit that. In California as well, we've had, you know, numbers that are going up. The trend is up, and we want to see that come back down. So the shotbyshot.org website is partially in response to that, but it's also a number of factors. You know, we've got, as it says here, parents have a much lower tolerance for risk for their children. We live in a time when there's more fear of a theoretical risk of vaccines or vaccine side effects than they are from the diseases themselves. And as you can kind of see in this image, it's, if you go on the website and watch the story, it's put together by a family. Their son, Tony, a 10-year-old, was one of the first H1N1 victims when we had the H1N1 outbreak. And, you know, they were not aware that flu could be that bad in a child. And so we've got all these things that have come together, and about May in 2010 is when we officially launched Shot by Shot. Because, you know, Anna was showing the CDC document, which we love the CDC, one of our valued partners, the CDC document, which is very rich with information and good, you know, good information, very well-researched, documented, lots of data. But numbers numb. You may have heard that before. Numbers numb. And when you're talking about data and research, it's all very good and very important. That's why we're here. We're going to a lot of workshops to learn about this stuff based on evidence. But, you know, as Andy Goodman, one of our storytellers who helped inspire some of our work as well, talked about how nobody ever marched on Washington because of a pie chart. You know, parents, families, we like to hear these stories. I think we've seen this in our electoral campaigns this year. A lot more use of stories to make that personal connection. And very excited that this is, like I said, resonated with a lot of families, and it's become a very popular site. And so it's an online collection of videos and stories. It started off as entirely videos, but we have been adding some stories where appropriate from people who have been touched by vaccine-preventable diseases. And it forms a story bank of sorts that can be used in a number of ways, and that's what I want to briefly or go over kind of quickly about all the different ways that these stories have been used or could be used to educate, create awareness, and complement your efforts, whether an immunization educator or immunization provider or in a different area of health promotion, and how you can translate that into your work. This is the homepage right now. We've been spending a lot of time promoting adolescent immunization, in particular back-to-school immunizations. We passed a law in California requiring that all 7th through 12th graders be immunized against pertussis, which many of you may be aware of is an epidemic format right now in the United States in various areas and not declining too much, as much as we'd think. And so we've spent time on that one, and coming up we're going to be promoting especially influenza vaccination. Two main facets of the project is to facilitate people sharing their stories. Some people find a lot of comfort in sharing these stories and want to be a part of this project because they want, and whether their child had the disease and survived, but I think especially if they had the disease and did not survive, whether it's a child or an adult, they feel, and I completely understand this, that they want to honor their child or their loved one. They want to make a difference to contribute to this effort. And we're very, as I said, honored that they have chosen to do that. And we want to encourage people and organizations doing disease awareness and prevention work to use these stories in their efforts. So this is a story gallery, and right now it's organized by the disease or the vaccine that prevents the disease. And then each one has, of course, as I said, the video clips that you can link to or just watch or link to in your presentations. Some of the stories were videotaped specifically for Shot by Shot, and others are just from people who wanted to get their story out there. A lot of collaboration. One of the families, I think this family right here, Brianna, died suddenly from influenza, and that one is courtesy of Families Fighting Flu, a national organization of families who have lost their children due to influenza. And mainly, there's adults also, but for some reason I remember the stories of children in particular. They're just heartbreaking because, again, people don't realize that their little ones can die from the flu. A range of stories produced by professionals, but mostly ones that were taped at home and organized by diseases, but we're starting a tagging project where you'll be able to search by age group, whether it's a child or an elderly person or in between, by written medium, whether it's a tape, we have some written stories, and by Spanish language also. Let's see. So a little bit about how this has grown. As you see, of course, the United States is the biggest area. We've got some big numbers. SITE has had visitors all over the world, every state in the U.S., including Hawaii and Alaska. And since the site was launched, again, since May 2010, we've had over 2.6 million visits and over 3.2 million page views. And the U.S. has, of course, had the most visitors, but Australia has also been a big fan of sorts of this work and used our stories for their work. About 300,000 visitors from Australia, where they also have big pertussis and flu problems. We see those there first sometimes in Australia. Dylan's story, I think Dr. Sawyer had an image of Mariah Bianchi, who's the mother who lost her son, Dylan, to pertussis. Also a very similar story to Natalie's. She is a wonderful advocate. She happens to be a nurse as well, and got her master's in public policy and health, and has been an amazing advocate, and again turned her loss into work that has helped us and many other families understand the deadliness of these diseases, and has helped others know that these stories can be used for training, education, and awareness purposes. And the way this works is that one of the ways that we envision this working is really integrating with social media. And as you see, there's a little blog post down there from a Central Valley newspaper. And so people learn about these things through the website sometimes, but other times they'll learn about it through a web posting or other medium and then go to the website. And so it's a very interactive, has potential to be a very interactive process. As you can see here, we've got the YouTube videos, brochures or handouts. The Facebook page we have a Shot by Shot Facebook page. Right here is a menu of items here where they've taken videos, including Dylan's story, for example, and taken those videos and put them on CDs and used those for training purposes. As you noticed from Gavin's story, that it can be a very effective way to start or make your point in a presentation. Some organizations are using this as a, sounds sort of odd maybe, but provider appreciation, but to thank organizations for their work and their advocacy and immunizations, provide them with CDs that they can use in their offices to share with parents who may be on the fence and to help them understand that these diseases are still out there. Jonathan's story, this is a young man who developed meningitis, lost his fingers and most of his legs, and an example, he has been another powerful advocate. I believe he's in the San Diego area. And Safeway, for example, uses this video as part of their training program. Gavin's story, I began a legislative hearing with Gavin's story. And we had, we're anticipating doing some legislation this year. Did it, got it passed. But to start off the legislative session, we did an informational hearing, and I started off with introducing Gavin's story. And a lot of the legislative staff that were there at the hearing, when we met with them later, they mentioned seeing this and how much it had moved them. And we got their attention. Didn't get all the votes, but we did get their attention. Also, the American Academy of Pediatrics has used this as one of the stories that they use in their trainings. Public outreach during the National Infant Immunization Week and National Influenza Vaccination Week. Another way to use these stories is another way to expand your reach during those awareness weeks or campaigns is to use these stories. And here we go. San Diego's health system has used this in a training, I believe, as well. On rotavirus, for example, taking these stories and using those in these trainings. If you need to obtain these, for example, for your presentation, like I'm doing and embedding it into a presentation, you can contact us. But it's also very simple to link to those. Just simply cut and paste those links into your stories, into your presentation. San Francisco, for example, did a whole campaign on adult immunization, and Susie's story on HPV and cervical cancer was shared to be able to drive home that this is a common virus that is now preventable, that we have a vaccine that, well, I shouldn't talk about the vaccine, I don't believe it, that this is a preventable disease, and now we need to be able to share that story with folks. But there are a lot of great stories. We have quite a few on HPV, I want to say, a lot on pertussis, only a couple on rotavirus, only some on HIB, I believe. And so one of the things I want to ask you folks is to share your stories, take this back to your community if you haven't already heard about it or if you haven't already shared, and encourage your folks to share their stories. One of the things we're working on also is encouraging health providers to share their stories, either of their personal experience with vaccine-preventable diseases or an experience that they've had with a patient, whether the patient survived or was lost. We've developed a shot-by-shot a CD that's also shareable. One of the great, great things, and I know I'm running out of time here for 15 minutes of Q&A, but is the work that's gone into this to be able to share it with everybody. There is, of course, the terms of use. We worked with a lawyer from Los Angeles who worked pro bono with us, and it was wonderful. He really made sure that this was along the lines that needed that we'd done our work to make sure that it was that we were covered as far as all the new stuff as far as making sure people that we owned the information, so to speak, that people weren't going to ask to be reimbursed for their stories or something. Anyway, we made sure all that was all covered. And so we've got the terms of use that's customizable to your organization. There's a whole complete manual to be able to share with folks, either if they want to do a story or if you want to work with somebody to do a story. And so it's all ready to go there for you, and it's all customizable to your organization. We've used these stories in our newsletters and encourage other people during a measles outbreak or when we had some heightened concerns about measles, for example, coming back from the Olympics or the World Cup soccer events. We highlighted the importance of measles vaccinations and used some of these stories by linking to them to remind people of the costs to us if these diseases come back. One last story I want to highlight is Kalia's story. This is not a video. It's a Facebook page that we've linked to, and the mother, Chelsea, Kalia's mom, another story similar to Dylan's and Gavin's, where the baby developed pertussis from the mother at a very young age before they were able to be immunized, and she kept a Facebook log of her experience, and it's heartbreaking, of course, to read read one more story like that. But this one, for some reason, we couldn't figure out why, it just took on a life of its own, as many of these social media stories do. They posted it on Wednesday, April 11th, shared on Facebook. Servers started going down, and much of the website was not functioning. When they figured out why, it was Kalia's story. During that week, 2 million people were hitting on that story through links that people had sent out to other folks. And I think it was the teen mother, but a lot of other older mothers shared this as well, and it really resonated with a lot of folks. And so we were pleased that Chelsea was willing to share, and Chelsea and her family were willing to share that with us. This is just a snapshot of how this is organized for people to use. And the last thing I wanted to say is one of the very first stories we had was a story I didn't share. I don't think it's listed on here, but it's called Sharon's Story. One of our coalition colleagues, Kathy Gustafson, she posted a notice on her mother at her mother's senior home to ask for people to share stories of vaccine-preventable diseases. I thought that was really genius because obviously older folks would have some of these stories, you know, that about diseases that we no longer see. She posted that, and a woman named Sharon, she was among the very first people to have her story taped, and she had had polio as a young child, and she's told a very interesting story about, you know, what happened to her and how it affected her family, and I think she really enjoyed being able to share that because what she told us at the end was that, you know, it happened, and we got over it, and we moved on, and we never talked about it again. And I think that's what happens with a lot of people is that they, it's even today, these families, it happens to them, it's very traumatic, you know, whether their child lives or dies or their loved one lives or dies, it's very traumatic, they get over it and they move on. But this is a really important story, and Sharon, for example, shared her story about polio, and that's, of course, thank God, not something we hardly ever see, and it's almost eradicated in the world, but really important to know that it's there, and we're really grateful for the people that have shared these stories, and we ask you to join us and see how you can contribute to this and keep this going. It's not just a California Coalition project. We consider this our project, and we thank you for your input and questions.
About 15 minutes of Q&A here. I'm going to have to dash out for a governing council meeting, but the panel is here. And I hope you'll all ask questions. Everything is available to you online, the whyichoose.org site, the Vacunas de Mi Salud. We can look up information about the fotonovela. You all hopefully got a copy of that. The handbook on how to do your own parent forum is online at the California Immunization Coalition's site, which is immunizeca.org, and the shotbyshot.org is the site for the Shot by Shot project. So I hope you'll use those resources. And please ask some questions.
Redirect. So let me just repeat the question. It's sort of how do you deal with someone who comes at you with a very oddball question or a very aggressive question, you know, essentially accusing you of promulgating incorrect information. So, I mean, I think it's basic communication principles. You acknowledge their question. I usually validate how I understand where they are coming from and in some cases where they may have gotten that information. But then I try to sort of redirect them, first of all, towards the source of the information and how so much information on the internet is unprecedented. filtered and that it's difficult to be able to filter it on your own and to encourage them to get input about the information that they're listening to. I try to get them to do that with their doctor, but if that isn't successful, at least direct them to the kinds of websites that you're probably familiar with that have good information. I direct people who feel like the vaccine, the diseases are not important or that severe, I direct them to Shot by Shot and say, go watch a few of these videos, and that may change your opinion. So basically, it's acknowledging them without in any way trying to disrespect their point of view, but then shifting them to the realities that you're well familiar with.
To this presentation, all thank you very much. I sort of had a question about where we are in recruiting teenagers and addressing education to teenagers, the future parents of new kids. And it could be 15 minutes from now that they become parents. I see that photonovellas are incredibly useful if they're left in the home, teens can read them. I think one of your slides showed Jim Carrey and Jenny McCarthy. Where are we in utilizing teen idols as spokespersons? The ones that have come to my mind in the past are Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez. If we could get them to be proponents in whatever languages you like, it tilts the scale, the balance in favor of when they become parents, that they're less likely to become personal belief exemplars. Where are we in terms of targeting this kind of audience and using teen role models to deliver the message?
I could actually take a stab at that, and other panel members can follow me up. Well, in California, we have a preteen vaccine week. And that's when we launched the photonovella during that time, and we have a collection of materials that go directly to preteens as a group of children that are not yet their own decision makers, but that have some stake and are learning about their health. So in order to help them be participatory in, making healthy decisions, we have materials that are directed towards them. Some of the videos on Shot by Shot are by preteens talking about their experiences. We have a couple that we went out and filmed, one in San Francisco where middle school twins got pertussis, gave it to each other. They talked about their, how miserable they were, their time out of school, and another child that we learned about in the Central Valley who we went out to film with his family. And the I Choose campaign, I think, is ripe for, getting celebrities. The way Akisha talked about, getting local people, it's incumbent on the community. Anyone can use it and adapt it. You can use it for, any cause. The concept is so simple. It's social norms. I think at one point we had some interest from one of the soccer champions who had taken an interest in immunization. We were trying to communicate with her. I'm not sure what came of it, but that potential is always there. Anyone else?
I just know I have an anecdote from San Diego. There's the local Rotary is actually funding a group of teens who are filming a video on vaccine safety, and they showed me some of their work. They did something on the Holocaust of all things. So they have this really well researched. They asked me the same level questions that I would get from a standard TV reporter about this stuff, and they're putting it together with a video that's designed for teens to consume. So it's not quite on your theme, but I think your idea is a good one. We need teens to talk to teens about this issue.
Yeah, and I had forgotten, we also, in California, we launched a video that was in a kind of a like an after-school story format about some teens that go back in time and to rescue one of their friends who gets meningitis because she didn't have her vaccine back then, so they have to go in someone's time machine. And so we do have fun ways of communicating with youngsters. Here in front, and then.
All four projects have a lot to offer the broader health conference, for sure. Are any or all of them currently thinking to get into the public health or similar things at present time?
Good suggestion.
But currently they're not. I'm just curious, like, that's an article or something.
Ours is not.
We don't have anything published. It's rather difficult to get things published through the government channels, but our coalition partners were happy to have them. In back. We feel your pain. That's a really, really tough nut to crack. And I mean, it certainly is possible to use some of these techniques. I think that we have used the I Choose campaign when it first came out. We had healthcare workers and we sponsored people within hospitals, and then they could recognize people among their own community participating in that campaign. Healthcare workers are those that are going to have more deeply rooted feelings about vaccines.
Approach them the same way you approach hesitant parents, that they often are acting on the same level of misinformation that the regular community members are, and you need to confront them with that, give them good information, give them some emotional stories, and it's the same battle, only at a slightly different level, because they should understand the science better.
And I've
noticed one thing that's very motivational. I'm a doctor there, and I think that
And I just wanted to provide one answer for her too, and then also this young gentleman right here and the young lady right there. What we did as Immunize LA Families, we also worked with the I Choose campaign with local community clinics. And when we allowed that campaign to be integrated into the clinic, it was for all departments. And so whether you were a doctor, whether you were the front desk, whether you were administration, we had everybody involved in the process, at least of being part of the campaign, which actually helped to increase conversations about vaccinations in a positive way. So it was just another way to address and kind of change the social norms that were taking place within those particular clinics. Of course, it didn't happen overnight, but it was something where people might not have discussed their positive feelings about vaccinations before because they don't want to get into a confrontation about it, but the campaign allowed them to do so in a non-confrontational way, and maybe your friend that you didn't realize was in support of vaccinations, you actually feel more comfortable speaking with them. So I just wanted to share that. And then, yes, sir.
Thank you. So my question is
So just to recap the question, it's basically the role of journalists and media coverage of events or perhaps any of these other programs in that the media often tries to create a balanced story when there isn't a balance and therefore interject anti-vaccine commentary into the discussion. There was a great deal of angst about that at our public health department before our first such parent event, but we did not observe any of that actually. Because we had prefaced the media notice with the purpose of these forums, and they sat through the forums with us and heard the questions and heard the approaches. So what we found was that the media coverage of it was very positive or accurate, I guess, to use a different word. And I think in general, the media has shifted across the country on this whole topic. They've pretty much heard enough of it. And are coming around to the pro-vaccine side. So I think that's less and less of a concern than it used to be.
Okay. And just in efforts of time, we had one final question right over here. Go ahead.
For me, that's what the shot-by-shot program does. It conveys things on a personal level. All the statistics are out of the equation, and for people like your mother, who's seen it real time and still won't, change her opinion, she's a tough nut to crack. I'm not sure what to do with her.
And I'm also in agreement with Dr. Sora. The whole focus of the I Choose campaign was about removing kind of the facts, because we recognize that they're always hearing facts. It's not that they didn't receive the information about the importance of this vaccine or how it prevents a particular disease. They're not unaware of that necessarily, but just emotionally, they're making a decision. So we chose to then address that decision-making process with from another emotional perspective. So we really looked at how to kind of pull away from some of the facts, at least at the beginning, and get to that emotional piece and people that you know and people that you trust and their personal stories and their experience with it, and then supplement it with the facts on the other side. Just in efforts of time, because I know we're a little bit over, I can stay for a little while. It depends on the other panels if they're also able to stay, but I want to thank you as now the stand-in facilitator. Thank you all for your participation with us and spending your lunch with us. We appreciate it very much. Thank you.